Welcome, everyone, to this second session on humanity and the environmental sciences. I'm your moderator, Dominic Halsmer. Thank you for coming, and thank you for being my peeps. My wife is reading a book right now called Find Your People. Anybody heard of that book? Well, thank you for being my people. For the last 10 or 15 years, I've realized how much ASA is a part of my people, my community. The first speaker today is Terry Gray, and he's speaking on terraforming the Earth. Sounds like science fiction. I'm excited to hear about terraforming the Earth, the biblical cultural mandate and eco-modernism. So please welcome Terry Gray.
Good morning. I'm not going to say this is something completely different from what we just heard, but it's an orthogonal presentation, and I hope it supplements in a helpful way. When I was in high school, which is a long, long time ago, I read a science fiction novel called Across a Billion Years. Okay, and it was about this galactic archaeological exploration of a billion-year-old civilization that seemed to have disappeared. And the things that people were finding, this is kind of 400 years in the future, but people were finding the remnants of this civilization as they explored the rest of the galaxy. But there was no evidence that this civilization still existed. And as they got into it, it turns out that when they looked at the star where this civilization was from, when they figured that out, it was gone. The star was completely missing. And the robot that was part of the archaeological finding that they actually were able to resuscitate and communicate with was actually quite shocked and surprised. Well, it turned out that this civilization was not extinct. It had been around for a billion years, but what they had done was they had taken one of the planets of their solar system and built what we talk about as a Dyson sphere around their star. And basically enveloped their star with the material from one of their planets so that they could capture, 100% of the energy from their star rather than this tiny little bit. Okay, so this is a radical example of what I'm going to loosely refer to as terraforming, okay, where we take our processes, our human devised operations, and radically change our planet and our solar system for our good. Another example you may be more familiar with, the Star Trek III, one of the movies, The Search for Spock. It's kind of a background theme, but here there was a planet that was uninhabited and no life forms present, and this human experimenter terraformed it. I had this technology that was able to convert this planet, this dead planet, into a life-giving, using technology, a life-giving planet. Anyway, there's a lot of story. It turned out it was a slightly problematic technology, and it ended up not working well. If you've seen the movie, but anyway, the point is that in these science fiction tales, we have this radical use of technology to change the planet or change a planet. Now, it's a little redundant to talk about terraforming Terra, but that I'm going to think of it in those ways. Let's see. I want to make sure there. Okay, so there's my books, and so I did, and you can help me with this. I mean, this list is not complete at all, but it's a brainstorm list of human impacts on our own planet. Human population, land use, monoculture, agriculture, domesticated animals, irrigation, and so on. You can read through the list. I'm going to talk about a few of these, and I'll just give you the punchline. I'm going to suggest that these are good things. This is what God wants us to do. This is what the human impact on our world ought to be. On this list, there's one curiosity here that I want to just for fun point out. Horse-powered mobility. You know, at the turn of the century, the turn of the previous century, people were actually beginning to worry about the accumulation of horse dung in the cities. Horses had become so prominent in our use and in the industrialization of our society and culture, but in a crowded, heavily populated city, it was a problem. What happened to that problem? We don't think about that anymore. We don't have that issue today. The development of the internal combustion engine made that go away, just like that. A further technological development solved a technological problem that was there. And there are others, whale oiled fueled lighting is another one that's an interesting one to think about. Anyway, you can add to this list. I'm going to give the punchline. Okay, I was already there. How do I go back? There we go. I'm going to give the punchline in case I don't get through all my examples before my time is up. But three key terms. Eco-modernism here's the Wikipedia definition, an environmental philosophy which argues that technological development can protect nature and improve human well-being through eco-economic decoupling. That is the separation of economic growth from environmental impacts. And the radical, the easiest way to think about that is to think about cities as being human-intense centers, but let's leave as much of nature untouched and unused as possible. Now, we still have to use a lot of it for agriculture to support the cities, but we're going to see that distinction between them. So this is a high-tech version of environmentalism. Okay, and it's I think it's worthy of Christian consideration. They and others have brought this idea of Anthropocene, a proposed geological era characterized by human influence on the Earth's geology and ecosystems. The beginning of this era is up for debate. Perhaps it goes all the way back to the beginning of the agricultural age, but a lot of people are focusing in on even more recently than that, the 1950s, 1960s, when we actually see a layer of radioactive material in the fossil record in the earth sediment layer due to the effect of using nuclear testing nuclear weapons. And then this idea of terraforming. Okay, so this is, you know, getting back to the illustration from the books. The process of transforming the atmosphere, temperature, surface topography, ecology of a planet or moon, and I'm going to say even of the Earth itself, so that it becomes more Earth-like or more suitable for human habitation. Okay, so, you know, terraforming the Earth, that's a little redundant, but you get the idea. These ideas, eco-modernism, Anthropocene, terraforming, I just want to do a shout out to the Breakthrough Institute. It's not a particularly Christian group, but it's a environmental group that is sort of pro-industrial, pro-human development. Okay, so I'm just going to go through a few examples, of human impacts, and I want to just say from the beginning that I'm going to go through these examples, and I'm going to not say that they're bad. Okay, that might be a common way, but here, human population. All right, and you see on the left that population curve from 10,000 BC to the present, and you see that dramatic increase starting in the 19th century and in today, where the human population has gone, from a few billion, a small fraction of a billion, and we expect it to get bigger and bigger. The figure on the right is our projections. A lot of people are thinking that we're going to max out at something like 10 to 12 billion here in the next few years. This is the last time, for example, that the human population has doubled. In today, in 2022, we're at 8 billion. You know, stop using 7 billion as the population of the planet. It's close enough to 8 billion that's the right the number if you're going to round out to the nearest billion. And 55% of those are city dwellers. Okay, we just went over 50% in the last decade or so. By 2050, we'll be at 9 to 10 billion, 65% city dwellers, and the human population is probably going to peak at 10 to 12 billion by 2100. Okay, so that's one, human impact. Animals and agricultural animals in particular is another impact. If we count body mass of mammals, 36% of mammal body mass are human beings. This is kind of shocking and startling in some ways. 60% are domesticated agricultural animals. 4% of the world's mammals by body mass are wild animals. Okay, huge human impact. 94% of non-human mammals are domesticated agricultural animals. And you can do the same kind of thing with birds. 72% by body mass of birds are, chickens, more or less. 28% are wild animals. So a huge impact to maintain the human impact. If we think about land use, You can read the statistics there, just focus on the bottom. Of the usable land in the world, 50% of the land is devoted to agricultural use and human impact. And only, 48% forests and shrub and grasslands are wild. 1% of the land in the world of the usable land is urban. So it's a pretty small footprint with respect to where human beings actually are. Okay, a few specific examples of human impact. Fertilizers and fixed nitrogen. Okay, the Haber-Bosch process. You might recognize the chemistry here. But by the end of the 19th century, there was a fear of our food and agricultural system collapsing because of the lack of fertilizer to grow things. And, Haber developed this process mostly to make wartime chemicals for bombs and munitions and so on. But the good side of it was that we could make fertilizer. We could make, it transformed the agriculture world was the full impacts were seen in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, where there really is enough food for everybody on the planet because of the use of these industrial fertilizers. An interesting statistic here, 50 to 70% of nitrogen in your body comes from this chemical process, the Haber-Bosch process. It's a dramatic, perhaps this is the most significant development of modern history that has enabled human flourishing. Fresh water. Okay, this is actually not a freshwater scene. This is the ocean looking out. But only a small percentage of our water available to us is in aquifers, lakes, and rivers, less than 1%. That's what we use in human existence and drinking and agriculture. How can we... And we're worried about that. But again, I'm going to argue there's a human, industrial, high-tech solution in using desalination technology. Of course, it takes energy to do that. But we can make, in principle, as much fresh water as we need from ocean water to do our agriculture and to support our human footprint. Interestingly, Israel has become an exporter of fresh water to its neighbors because it has developed this desalination technology. Okay, the one I want to give some attention to, and I'm running out of time here, is CO2 global warming. These are common charts that you see, the Keeling curve showing the increase of carbon dioxide. This second chart is showing the CO2 concentrations over the last 800,000 years, up, down, due to the some of the ice age cycles and large scale. But you notice at the far right, that curve isn't ending there with the little green part just above the other. It's all the way to the top at over 400 parts per million. We just heard a little bit about that and the impact that has on global temperature. This is a concern that is a human footprint. Well, What can we do about that? What should we do about that? I'm gonna encourage us, to do all the traditional things: high efficiency energy use, alternative renewable energy sources. But there's a couple of things that we can do that are these high tech solutions in terms of carbon dioxide removal from the atmosphere, carbon capture and storage, carbon capture and utilization, where we can actually, we know how to do this, take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and get us back to levels that are appropriate for us. And here's some of the chemistry there of carbon dioxide capture, and it takes energy to do all of this, and as these other processes, the making of fresh water and so on, but we can sort of do what the natural world does in the photosynthesis respiration cycle. There are ways, chemical ways, high-tech ways, if you will, for us to take the CO2 that goes into the atmosphere because we burn fossil fuels for energy, and remove it and convert it back to the synthetic fuels. Okay, that's what some of the chemistry at the bottom here is. Now, again, it costs money, it costs energy, and my paper from last year in PSCF was a good affirmation of nuclear power and nuclear energy as a way to fuel some of these things, but it's doable. Okay, but these are high-tech solutions. You know, sometimes in environmentalism, we hear, well, we need to get rid of, 6 billion of the human population, get us back to a manageable population. We need to all adopt rural, low-tech lifestyles, and I'm going to suggest and encourage you to think about, no, we can do this, with technology and fix these things. And that's kind of the history of our work. Okay, so what? Here's our familiar creation mandate from Genesis 1, fill the earth, subdue the earth, rule the earth. The creation mandate from Genesis 2, cultivate the garden, keep the garden, name the animals. This is a discussion of not only preserving and conserving and stewarding what God has given us, but using it productively, but in a way that is consistent with conserving and keeping God's good creation. Our mandates to know, preserve creation, but also to use it for the service of others and to use it for His glory. We, in our ASA fourth plank, we recognize our responsibility as stewards of God's creation to use science and technology for the good of humanity and for the whole world. And this word steward is an important word for us to think hard about. Steward does not necessarily just mean conserve and preserve, but it means to use in a good and productive way. And I think of one of the parables in Matthew, you entrusted me to 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. See, you entrusted me to 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. And the master says, you have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. What happened to the servant who just preserved and conserved without making good use? Well, I went out and hid your gold in the ground. Here, see what belongs to you. And Jesus comes back pretty harshly. You wicked, lazy servant. Throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So merely conserving, keeping, preserving is not what we're called to do. We're called to use the creation and keep it, preserve it. Yes, I think we need to worry about conservation kinds of issues and preserving the wild. But we inevitably will have human impacts, and we need to do those well, do those in environmentally sensitive ways, but use it to help others and to help help God's world. And that's really what our ASA statement of faith says, to use science and technology for the good of humanity and the whole world. And I think that's it. Yep, thank you.
Thank you for your talk. I had a question about the carbon capture technology. Mm-hmm. My understanding of this is that you mentioned the amount of energy and how expensive it would be to implement this. So even if it is scientifically a possibility, I think my question is, if continuing to use fossil fuels and coal also requires the significant costs and energy of carbon capture technology, wouldn't that result in a significantly more expensive source of energy overall that would no longer be economically competitive, and therefore just switching to renewable resources and such as natural gas, would that be a simpler solution in that it is cheaper, and it's, then you don't have to exhaust energy and scientific efforts towards an outlet that is then just going to make one source of energy significantly more expensive while causing a problem and trying to fix it simultaneously, instead of just switching to something that is less expensive overall and both a solution to that problem without also perpetuating the problem.
Right, so I mean, there's several ways to answer your question. One is we've got a CO2 problem. I think we actually need to get rid of some of the CO2 in the atmosphere to get back to, 350 is what some people think is the best place to be. Yes, it's going to cost money and energy, and I'm a pro-nuclear person. Obviously, you can't fuel this activity of carbon removal with carbon-based fuels. You know, that's just not going to work. But if you bring it from renewables or nuclear power, there are places where logistically, using fossil fuels and liquid fuels, it makes sense. And it would be nice to have sustainable options for that. Carbon capture technologies is a way to do that. But carbon capture technologies are also going to be the way to fix the problem that we have introduced in the past, 100 years.
Terry. Thanks. Great talk. Do you have any specific suggestions for carbon sequestration? I've heard talk about trying to put carbon in concrete, because there's a fair bit of carbon there already, and using our anthropogenic carbon to put into concrete. Any progress on that or other specifics?
Yeah, there's a lot of places to be thinking about this, and I think you know, there's some chemical processes for once you take CO2 out of that. I mean, some people don't actually say convert it to anything. Let's just get CO2 out of the atmosphere and pump it back into the ground where the oil was that we used to that we pulled it out from. And just, you know, that's the sequestration side of things. So that would help solve some of the CO2 level problems. But I'm more open to a respiration photosynthesis model where we cycle through this. And then we don't have any necessity to use additional fossil fuels, because we're regenerating fuel to use in environments where that is a feasible and more reasonable thing to do.
Thank you, Terry. Very interesting talk. Let's thank our speaker, and we'll welcome our next one.